Down to Revelation 17, 10 through 14. Now, up there in that verse where it says, that was, means the beast was previously alive. And is not, means the beast died. And even he is, means he came back to life to be the eighth. So as I understand these scriptures, the Antichrist is the head of the seventh empire. All these other heads are past heads. They're no longer in existence. But they have passed all their expertise on in the executive, judicial, and administrative branches of government. And our systems today are based largely on the carnal administrative abilities, executive abilities, judicial abilities of men. So he's the living head of the beast, and he's the seventh head. But when he dies from a wound of war, he is another man, resurrected from the dead, completely empowered by Satan. And he also becomes the eighth king, even though there are still only seven heads. Now the woman down here on the beast is what we're going to be dealing with tonight and part of tomorrow night. And notice that the first beast has crowns on its ten horns. The second beast doesn't, meaning they have surrendered their authority to the Antichrist. And he's the scarlet beast in complete control. Supposedly a man whose blood was shed, but he came back to life. Satan incarnate in human flesh. Now, quite frankly, at times in Revelation, the personification of the Antichrist changes. At times he is represented as a dying head on the first beast that comes back to life on the second beast. But in the vast majority of cases, as in Revelation 13, 17, and 18, and 19, he is identified as the entire beast. When I was a young man, that used to give me a lot of trouble because I'd get mixed up on the different things. Now, Revelation 13 and 3, we've covered the first beast. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now there have been seven great empires that affected and afflicted Israel. But they did more than that. Man, when he came out of the Garden of Eden and began to multiply, had to develop a system of government. He had to have a government that had an administrative ability, that had an executive ability to carry out what the administration decided, and a judicial body to determine what was wrong and what was right. And so over the years, these cultures that you see on the screen, which are the six heads before the Antichrist, are largely what our whole system is based on across the entire earth. If you go into the English parliamentary system and really become familiar with it, you'll discover that their ideas, their precepts, their concepts all came from these ancient empires. I guess the first really classical empire that had an excellent administration, excellent writing system, excellent executive system, and an excellent judicial system was probably Egypt. Well, the Assyrians were very warlike people, but with the passage of time, they became very good administrators, executives, and they had a judicial system. It wasn't as good as the one we have now, but some of the things they developed, we still use. Same thing with some of the things the Egyptians did. And then, after that came the Babylonian Empire, and their cuneiform writings and system of storage of documents and maintenance of historical records was quite good. And then after that came the Persian Empire. And each one of these empires developed better techniques, learning from the one before it, adapting from their system what was effective, throwing out what wasn't effective, and developing new ideas. Persian system was very efficient. And when Alexander the Great came roaring through, they had a better system than he did. So he adopted, his generals adopted many of their systems, and they passed into the Greek culture. And the Greek culture, they weren't slouches either. So they developed a highly, highly technical, well thought out administrative form of government in the executive, judicial, and in the administrative function of government. Well, by the time the Roman Empire came along, they were pretty bullish bunch at first, but they took what the Greek culture had, developed it into something that was executed properly. And the Greeks had taken things from the other cultures. And so finally, now today, a lot of our laws come from the old Roman courts. And this seventh empire of Antichrist will take all of this together, all of these great empires represented by beast. The Egyptian beast was a sphinx. The Assyrian was a bull with a pharaoh's head on it, or not a pharaoh's head, but a Syrian king's head. Then there was the Babylonian lion and the Medo-Persian bear, then the Greek leopard, and then the Roman horrible thing. You couldn't even describe what kind of a beast it was. And all those are the heads. And that's what the final head, the Antichrist, is based on. And everything he does functions off of the carnal system that men have developed. Now, when he says, "And I saw one of the heads, as it were, wounded to death," that's the seventh head, the Antichrist. "And his deadly wound was healed," he comes back to life, "and all the world wondered after the beast." Now let's take a look at the second beast. "And here is the mind which hath wisdom." The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman setteth. One of the things I've had problems with some people on is the fact that there were the seven hills of Rome. But when John was writing, I don't think these seven hills had even been personified as the hills on which Rome sat. And I think it just happens there are seven hills around Rome, but they are not mountains, and they are not governments. These are governments, and they represent all the empires, all the governments that came before the Antichrist's seventh empire. Governments are pictured as being mountains in the Bible. Here's an example of that in Isaiah 2:2. "This will come to pass in the last days," we're talking about the end times, "that the mountain," the government of the Lord's house, "shall be established in the top of the mountains. All the other governments on the earth, all the other kingdoms on the earth, are looked upon as mountains. And the Lord's house is established in the very top over all the governments of the world, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it." So this idea of a mountain being a government is a very common one in the Bible. And of course, God's great mountain kingdom had a rock cut out of it without hands, miraculously, which was Christ. And when he came, he struck the feet of the great statue, and the statue collapsed, and his kingdom then was established. The six governments upon which the seventh will set are the Egyptian, the Assyrian, the Babylonian, the Persian, the Grecian, and the Roman. All of the administrative, judicial, and executive expertise of these great empires forged by carnal man will be the foundation of the final empire of Antichrist. And the first beast has a wounded head. I believe he's the Antichrist. He receives a wound of war that kills him, but he miraculously comes back to life. And that makes him not only the seventh head, but also the eighth. I think that's what this is talking about in Revelation 17 8-14. The beast that thou sawest was, means he was alive, and is not. As the seventh head and part of the beast, he was, but he died and is not. And here he comes back to life and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, the abyssu phreatos. I don't think that this means that he came from there initially, as much as it does that he will be resurrected from the dead. But regardless of exactly what that means, he comes up, and he was dead, and then afterward he goes into perdition, destruction, which is when he is taken by Christ at the end of the tribulation period and cast along with a false prophet into a lake burning with fire. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was alive, is not, he died, and yet is, came back to life. Number 9. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman setteth. Now tomorrow night we're going to deal with precisely who the woman is, and we won't leave any doubt. It'll be absolutely proven. And there are 7 kings, 5 are fallen. Egyptian, Assyrian, Babylonian, Persian, Grecian. He is writing at the time of the Roman Empire, and one is, and the other is not yet come, the Antichrist Empire. And when he comes, he must continue a short space, very short period of time. His kingdom is not very strong, and his kingdom is mixed with clay and iron, which don't cleave together very long. There's an intermingling of the people within it, and it's not a very long-lasting kingdom. And the beast that was alive, and is not, but died. Even he is the 8th, and is of the 7. He was the 7th, but he is also the 8th, and goeth into perdition, to destruction. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast, and have already named which countries I think they'll be. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lord shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Now he gives some advice to those who are here when all this is going on. He says, if any man have an ear, let him hear. Revelation 13, 9 and 10. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He said, don't worry about these people that are leading them away into captivity, and don't worry about them being taken prisoner and killed. He said, the same thing's going to happen to those who are doing it to the others when I come. He that killeth with the sword, those who are killed with the sword, will be killed with the sword of the Lord in the same way when he comes. And then he points out something that is very important for us to understand and to be ready to practice. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. That's what this is. Don't worry about it. The Lord will take care of all of it. He's going to recompense to those that recompense to us. Now, as far as what happens in this country, I expect within the next 6 years, all of a sudden, one day, we're going to be going merrily about our way, doing everything we normally do, working at the jobs we normally work at, and all of a sudden, the Antichrist is going to attack. And all of a sudden, there are going to be horrendous earthquakes everywhere. And there's going to be absolute sheer mass confusion. You saw what happened when the Twin Towers was rammed into. You saw the reaction of people in this country and how petrified and horrified and shocked they were. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when earthquakes are rippling one after another across the surface of this earth, when power lines are down, when there is no power, when we are back to square one, about like when Adam was cast out of the Garden of Eden, no more power to run computers. People won't be buying cars, and they'll be fighting for groceries in the grocery store. It's hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to picture. Makes you wonder if it's really true. But it is. And whenever this happens, there is going to be so much confusion that it's going to take the United States at least 6 months to get back any semblance of reasonable order. And then our outlook will be so focused on our own domestic survival that we're not going to be interested in what's going on over in the Middle East. And eventually, I think we will get back to a point to where our fleets will still be in existence, what aren't taken by tsunami waves, and we'll still be a world power with about 10% of what we had when the others are down to 1% of what they had. And we'll still try to help Israel, I think, at the end. But we're talking about survival here. We're talking about food, clothing, and shelter. I'm not worried about persecution by the Antichrist. He's going to have his hands full over there. That's where his kingdom is going to be. If I'm going to be concerned about anything, it's not the Antichrist persecution, him coming and having our heads chopped off, us being arrested for being Christians. The persecution is going to be over there. Those people over there that have been such loose and weak Christians, it's going to be a day of reckoning. It's going to be put up or shut up. It's going to be grow or die. Grow spiritually or die. That's where most of the horror and terror of the Antichrist is going to be concentrated. I'm not saying that he won't have an influence in this country. Quite frankly, I don't think he necessarily wants an interest in this country. He wants to get that Islamic empire built. He wants to get it functioning, organized. And we're going to be so busy trying to keep up with ourselves that we're not going to know, have any semblance of governmental order, I would say, for at least 6 months. Look, my grandson, Josh, came over the other day to get the lawnmower. And I've got so much stuff to do. I'm really not lazy, but I'm not in that great a shape. I've got so much work I have to do over there to get all this stuff done I'm doing, that I let him mow the lawn. We pay him $25 for it. And he said, "I can't get this thing to start, Granddad." And I said, "Well, maybe it's a spark plug. Go get a new spark plug." He said, "What's a spark plug?" And I'm serious. He said, "Where is it?" And I had to go out and show him the spark plug. All he had learned how to do was pull that thing and get started. But that's nothing. You take my grandson, Trey. He's a computer genius. A computer genius. That kid can sit there and do things with that computer. It's miraculous. But if that kid had to survive, he'd starve to death. Now, I'll tell you what this country is based on. An electrical wall socket that you plug a computer into, and that's our whole society. I remember when I used to watch Lum Edwards and Abner Peabody. And every time Abner would say something, Lum would say something, old Abner would say, "Good for you, Lum, good for you, Lum." I loved to hear those guys. And they ran the Jot 'em Down store. They didn't have a cash register. They just had an old tablet. They'd get over there with that lead pencil and they'd figure those prices out and add and stuff. We got kids in our high school down here can't add 4 and 4. They hit 4 plus 4 and it's 8. They know how to use a computer, They know how to use a calculator. They don't know how to rough in a house and how to build a house. I'm old, out of shape, and lazy anyway. But I was taught how to rough in a house for plumbing. I was taught how to build a house. Not a very good one. I never was that good a carpenter. But these kids don't know anything. The only way they know anything is if they happen to work for a contractor, and that's what they get paid for, and that's part of the job. So what's going to happen in this country, in all these large cities like Detroit and Chicago, and even for that matter, Little Rock, when you've got a population down there that really isn't certain where milk comes from? They think you may squeeze it out of berries. And how are they going to survive? You talk about mass consternation. Now, what I'm talking about here is really not opinion. The Bible indicates all of a sudden, boom, these earthquakes are going to start. All of a sudden. The only element is when. And from everything I see, it's going to be here very shortly. Well, I keep talking about all this stuff because when it happens, I think it will help us because we'll be better prepared than if we had never thought about it. A lot of our churches, you come in, you sit down. Everybody comes in a robe. They practice in the choir. They have a paid music director, a paid youth director, and they sing, and it is beautiful. And everybody is enthralled. And then after they've sung for about 45 minutes, the pastor, who's usually young, good-looking, and bubbly, and dashing and debonair, preaches a little cutie for about 15 minutes that tells them, "You're right in there working for the Lord. Hallelujah!" Then they sing some praise songs. And then they go home. What are they going to do when this happens? What are they going to do? Boy, I'll tell you one thing. They're going to be shocked. Absolutely shocked. Do you detect a taint of bitterness in what I'm saying? I hope not. I don't mean it to be bitter. I'm desperate, but I don't have any idea what to do about it, except just to wait until it happens, and then hope by some chance they might ask me. But there aren't going to be a whole lot of people around that can tell them what's happening if you want to know the truth. The woman on the seven-headed, ten-horned beast, Revelation 17:7. "And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns." No crowns, just horns. The woman is wearing purple, and she's riding on a scarlet beast. So we won't be wondering who the woman is. So there'll be no question about it as we go through these scriptures. Let's jump ahead 11 verses and let's read the end of the book and let it decide who the woman is. "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." John wrote this in 95 and 96 A.D. There was only one great city known to John which reigned over all the kings of the earth, the known world of John's day. And that city was the city of Rome. So there is absolutely no question whatsoever that the woman represents the city of Rome. That's straightforward, doesn't leave any question about it. Revelation 17:1-8. "And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials of wrath, Now, I won't be here when these vials of wrath are poured out. And I'm glad. But there are going to be an awful lot of Roman Catholics down here. And the Pope's going to be down here. And most of the so-called religious people in Europe are going to be down here. And all of the followers of Mohammed, the worshipers of Allah, are going to be down here. And talk with me, saying, "Come hither, and I will show thee the judgment of the great whore that setteth on many waters." The Roman Empire was the first great builder of good roads. The roads, many of them, you can still find in Europe. They're the first empire that ever built a whole system and complex of good roads that interlinked through their whole empire. That was the way that Paul and the others who carried the message to the Gentiles and to the synagogues in all of these towns, they traveled to these roads. And this kingdom of Rome dominated all the Mediterranean Sea, the Black Sea, the Red Sea. It even extended down to the Persian Gulf, went all the way up the coastline of Europe into England. And it did set up on many waters. And its religious influence in teaching false doctrine and worshiping of pagan idols, even in John's day, was well known. "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication." Now, it indicates that at one time she wasn't a whore. And when the Lord was on this earth, he organized the first New Testament church. And many first New Testament churches were formed and organized. But there came a time when some of them began to follow a false teaching, various forms of departure from the faith, a system of teaching and doctrine, and they began to cluster off into a heretical branch, which eventually became the Roman Catholic Church. And so the reason she's called a whore is because she was from the original New Testament churches, but she went out from them because she was not of them. For had she been of them, she would have no doubt continued with them, but she did not, and she left, and she became a whore, and she got in bed with all the European countries and with all the kings of the earth. And she adopted into her worship many of their pagan beliefs in order to get them to convert to Catholicism, universal church. And the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. It pictures people that are like spiritually drunk, spiritually unaware of what's going on around them. You take a man that's physically drunk. He's conscious. He can see. He can hear. He can taste. But in reality, he has no idea of what's going on around him. A man who is spiritually drunk with false teaching, he can physically see, hear, taste, touch, and feel, but he has no spiritual idea of what's going on around him or what true spirituality is. And it is now 8 o'clock, so I'll stop and we'll continue here tomorrow, and we'll finish this up, hopefully, tomorrow night. I don't think the Pope's going to be around much longer. I think he'll either die or I think he'll announce his retirement. And I am really anxious to see who they put in there. I know this. It'll go the way God wants. And I'm really curious to see what they do. Most of those cardinals have been raised in a completely dishonest, money-grabbing, money-oriented, power-oriented environment that has no connection with Christianity whatsoever. It's going to be interesting to see how that pack of thieves operates and who they put in. But I tell you one thing. If it is Jean Marie Lustiger, who was formerly Aaron Lustiger, you're going to see one preacher here that goes out of his mind. Because this is, in my mind, a candidate who has all the attributes of the false prophet. And I'm just waiting to see. I'm certainly not making any predictions. I had a candidate one time named Elias Sarkis, and I was just dead wrong. So I've been a little more careful now. And so I'm just going to wait and see. But I told you with Elias Sarkis, I said, I may be wrong. I told you that over and over again. But I really thought he was going to be the guy. So we'll see.